Welcome to Town Talk with Ted on News Talk 1230 WFVA. Over the next hour, you'll be introduced to business and local leaders who impact our community. Now, the recipient of three First Place Virginia Association of Broadcasters Awards and the host of Town Talk, Ted Schubel.
We're going to talk this morning about changing careers and getting ready to do that and some of the practical things that you have to do. Amy Bain with us this morning. Laura Klopp also here with us to talk about this subject and engage in the conversation. Good morning to both of you.
Good morning.
Amy, I'll start off with you because you're kind of our expert this morning on all of this. Tell us about your background.
Well, I was a teacher for 14 years up until this year, and taught English both at the high school and middle school levels in Spotsylvania and Stafford. Teaching was a great career. I enjoyed it. It was, probably one of the most creative careers that I can think that somebody would have. You know, you have a lot of ability to drive what's going on in your classroom, the kind of lessons you put together, and I'm a creative person outside of the classroom, so I always tried to bring that into the classroom and make that kind of alive for the kids. So that was my background, English teacher here in Stafford, and I always tried to bring the arts into my classroom and a lot of media kind of sources. So
as we talk about changing careers today, this is something that you actually experienced yourself.
Yes, yeah. I started, I would say, probably about 4 years ago now, writing for our local publication, The Front Porch, mainly because I had trained to be a writer when I was in college back 20 years ago and had always wanted to write. And I've been writing creatively in my own life, you know, since then. But I wanted to really pursue that and see if I could make something happen with that, to be published or publish articles about people. And that's been a really great experience, just interviewing people for the past 4 years. I have a little recorder that I use when I interview people, and I have like 60 people's voices on it, which is great as a writer, too, because you have all these different people and voices on this machine. So 4 years ago, I started writing for Front Porch with Rob and Rob Grogan. And, you know, I can't say enough nice things about Virginia and Rob and Lexi. They're just great. And then, you know, I just pursued that and I kept working at that. And then I kind of made a decision a couple of years ago that, you know, at this point in my life, I'm in my 40s. At this point in my life, I kind of needed to make a decision whether or not I was going to continue teaching or whether I was going to pursue the writing piece. Because as an English teacher, you really don't have a whole lot of time outside of class, you know, to work on your own writing. So that's what I did. I made plans over the past couple of years. I started by talking to the office at Mary Washington for careers for, you know, students. I'm an alumni from Mary Washington. I got my master's there. And, you know, so they gave me some good advice about things I might do to get started, start the ball rolling. And that was probably 2 years ago. I continued writing during that time. I continued, you know, practicing that, and then made the decision this year that it was going to be the year that I resigned.
So, what made it this year? Why did you say now's the time?
I think it had to do with my age, and it had to do with the fact that my son has finished Germana, and he's going off to the 4-year college now. And, you know, it was just a shift. There's a shift going on in my life right now, so I made the decision to make that change. So,
when you talk about age, I guess you reach a point where you feel like, either I'm going to stay in teaching, or if I'm going to make a move, this is the time?
I think so. And, you know, I've talked to quite a few people about career changing since I'm doing it myself. And, in fact, I just interviewed Doug McCusker, who is going to take the minister's position at the Unitarian Fellowship in town. And he changed his career, a really huge career shift, from working for the Department of Defense and jumped into ministry, which seems like, you know, such a different career. But talking to these people, really, everyone seems to have a lot of things in common. For one thing, when you get to a certain age, you kind of look at your life and you say, you know, what was that thing that I really wanted to do that I haven't done yet, you know? Mm-hmm. And you also start to take account for things in the career you're in. For instance, in teaching, I was in it for 14 years. So I started thinking about, you know, is this really the career that is going to take me through to the end of retirement? You know, is this the career that I'm best suited for? Which were all things when I interviewed Doug that he was also coming to those conclusions. So I think those are kind of natural questions that people come up with in their minds at the kind of the 40s, 50s age bracket.
And what's that? There's that saying, it has something to do with nobody on their deathbed regrets the things they did. They regret the things they didn't do.
Yeah. So, you know, I think those things were all going through my mind as I made this decision. And so this year was the one. So
were you nervous?
I was very excited. No, more excited. Once the decision came out, I was more excited about it than nervous. People ask me, are you scared? Are you, you know, and of course I have anxiety over, you know, finding another full-time job or, you know, because I need to support myself, of course. But no, I feel like, and I think people will feel that if they're in that position, and it's truly right for them, I think people will feel this was the right decision.
But now there is that identity issue, and I went through it as well, because I was also a teacher, not for mm-hmm. as many years, but, yeah. And then you stop being a teacher. And yeah. That, in our society, being a teacher is a huge, in fact, anything you do, that's a way to identify yourself. How are you dealing with not being the teacher anymore?
Yeah, we were talking about this a little bit before. That is one thing I'm finding is a shift I'm having to make, you know, in my own mind. I think it's just ingrained as a teacher. You start thinking about when I go back in the fall. Hmm. So, you know, that's something I'm having to learn how to turn off a little bit. And it is different. You know, I've always thought of myself as a writer alongside teaching, you know, so I had kind of in my head these two titles for myself. But teacher was always the predominant one because it took over most of my life, you know, because you just throw yourself into it when you're in teaching. But yeah, having to move the teacher title off the top of my head and move writer up to the top is the piece I'm working on now. So,
well, this is an interesting topic, Laura, for you too, because like you mentioned, you were a teacher and you've gone through a lot of mm-hmm. these kind of transitions.
I did, actually. In my case, I have to say it was much less scary because I have a financial support system which made my transition something that I could safely do without fear of paying the rent or not being able to pay the rent. Mm-hmm. So when I made my choice, it was more the emotional issue. I loved being a teacher. I loved being an art teacher. To me, giving up that part of my identity was very difficult. But it was definitely time for a change, and it was time to explore new things because I had a very strong feeling. I love teaching, but teaching tends to be a very similar routine from year to year. You have different students, but so much of what you're doing is so similar. And, like, I feel like I needed growth and to learn new things and new skills and to express myself in new ways. And I didn't see how, by staying in teaching, and I knew I didn't want to go into administration, I would be able to do that. So it required breaking away from that to get to something new.
So, Amy, have you gotten over that, of the whole teacher identity?
I wouldn't say I've gotten over it because I've only been about a week and a half out of teaching.
Yeah,
I mean, you know,
okay.
The end of the school year here was just a week and a half ago. I was slowly distancing myself from it as the year wound down. You know, I guess I wouldn't say I would totally disregard the title because I think everybody is a teacher in some sense, you know, I mean, certainly,
yep.
But that, you know, working for a school system title is going to be gone. I think it's funny. It's interesting what Laura brought up as far as needing an area to grow while she was in teaching. I had a sort of a similar experience, but also had opportunities to grow while I was teaching. For instance, last summer I was able to participate in the Northern Virginia Writing Project, which is a writing program for teachers through George Mason University. But it also ended up being sort of the thing that helped me decide that the writing piece was the thing I wanted to foster, you know, at that point, even though it was really a program built for teachers of writing, and had some excellent ideas for teachers. And I started a blog out of that program, which is another writing piece, where I interview teachers who use writing in their classrooms, you know, to sort of show people what other teachers are doing in their classrooms.
Amy Bain with us this morning. We're talking about career changing. Laura Klopp here, too. Laura, I should mention, is going to be with us monthly to bring people like you, Amy, in to introduce us to various people in the community, not always in the arts world, but a lot of time in the arts world. More coming up this morning on Town Talk on News Talk 1230 WFVA.
Welcome back to Town Talk with Ted on News Talk 1230 WFVA. You can weigh in on today's Town Talk topic on Facebook. Just search News Talk 1230 WFVA. Now, your host, Ted Schubel.
We're talking about career changing this morning and making a career change when you get into your 40s, 50s, I guess even your 60s, perhaps. Amy Bain here to walk us through that, and Laura Klopp also here this morning as we talk about this. Amy, talk about how you started making the transition, because you kind of hinted at that you had started to pull yourself away and look at this as what you were going to do.
I did. Well, about 2 years ago, I think I mentioned this a little while ago, but I went initially back to my alumni association at Mary Washington and found the career office and had about an hour-long meeting with one of the counselors there, very, very helpful. And some of the advice I was given at that point was very logical advice. I think the first thing that they told me that I should do is to write down all my skills, all the skills that I thought that I had proficiency or expertise in, and have those handy as I started to look at jobs. When you look at your jobs online or the qualifications or the things that they're looking for, if you have that list handy, you can start kind of pulling over the expertise you have when you're writing up your cover letter, when you're making your resume, because the resumes really can't be very long. So you want it to hit the points, you know, that you're really trying to get in from their ad for the job.
With resumes, are they still telling you keep it at a page?
Yes, that is the advice, is to have a page resume. It can be front and back if you've had a long career. I think 14 years is substantial enough, you know, for a front and back resume. And especially if you have a case like mine where I not only had the teaching piece, but I had a lot of freelance work. I'm a visual artist as well, so I have a piece on my resume for that. I have the piece for writing for Front Porch. I have freelance writing piece. So it kind of had to be a front back page. But some people, if you're transitioning from one or two jobs, sometimes you can even get it onto the front of a page, which is even better. The cover letters, I actually enjoy writing the cover letters, because the advice I was given was to try to make them stand out. And since I am a writer, it's sort of fun to create those stories on the cover letter that's going to attract somebody's attention.
Give us some examples. How do you make a cover letter stand out?
Well, you know, what I did, I'll just back up a little bit. One thing I did as I started to transition this year is I realized, and I was sort of, you know, the first half of the year, I said, yes, this is going to happen. You know, I'm going to go in and I'm going to talk to my principal. I'm not going to leave it up in the air, because I want to make sure that she knows ahead of time so she can plan for what she needs to do. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people told me, oh, you should hold off because, you know, what if you don't get a job and then you don't want to leave teaching at the end of the year? Well, maybe it's just who I am, but I felt like that was a little unfair to my principal, and I didn't want to do that to her. So I talked to her in February, and around that time I was realizing that, you know, I was going to need to get my resume together and my cover letter. And it had been, you know, literally 14 years since I'd had to write a cover letter and do a real resume, because when you transition between counties or if you're transitioning from one school to another, it's basically just a verbal interview and they look at, you know, what you've taught. So I really didn't have any idea of where to start. So I did invest in a program to help me get started. I used a program called Career HMO. It worked out pretty well. You know, it gives you a lot of advice as far as how to set up your cover letters. There's a lot of tutorials, which I really like the visuals. It was good. And so that was very helpful because going at it cold like that, which I guess a lot of people are probably in that position where maybe you've been in a job for 10 years and you haven't had to update your resume or you just haven't, you know, you've been lax about doing it. So, you know, that was very helpful. And there were some good tips on there about how to make your resume look more current, you know, not to be kind of old fashioned resume. It was a more current resume.
What are some of the tips to make your cover letter or your resume stand out?
Well, for the cover letter, one thing that was suggested is that it really be more of a story about yourself. You don't want to repeat exactly, and I guess that is common advice for cover letters, but you don't want to repeat exactly what's in your resume because they're about to go look at your resume. So, yeah. It's, you know, that doesn't make sense to just repeat it. So you want to come up with a little story that's going to, you know, gather interest, you know, just like you would if you were writing a story about anything. So your cover letter should be a story about yourself. And then with the resume, if you can sort of start your resume with, you know, the basic information kind of up at the top, say if you were going to talk about the industries you've been involved in or the years of expertise you have in each type of skill. And then there's really a lot of leeway as to what you put next on a resume. I mean, it seemed like there were a lot of different examples out there. You know, some people start with their work experience. Some people will use certifications if that's an important thing in the job that you're trying to get.
Yeah, I've heard that whatever's like best representing you, mm-hmm. you put higher. If your educational achievements right. seem a lot more noteworthy and recent or equate to the job you're looking at yes. better, then that goes higher. Because mm-hmm. you assume if they're not interested in the very beginning, they may not even look at the whole resume. So you want them to say, oh, okay, this person could work. What else do they have?
Right, right. For instance, I did recently, and I'm a freelance writer too, so I've helped some people with their resumes. I recently helped somebody who was trying to transition in the banking world. And this person, really the certifications were more important. So we put that up top in his resume, you know, because we knew that that was mm-hmm. going to be what an employer would look at. So I would suggest for anyone looking to change careers that these programs that are out there to help you build your resume are actually very helpful and really worth the investment, especially if you're not real confident about your writing skills. And even if you are, like I'm very confident in my writing skills, but I knew that I didn't really know that format. So I knew I needed some instruction.
These are programs you found online?
They're a resume, you know, building program. Not like the kind you go into the website to build your resume, but these are actually instructional.
So like software?
More instructional okay. programs like this Career HMO or other ones that are out there.
Okay.
You know, that can kind of talk you through it. It's just a little bit of a support, you know, because it's hard enough trying to figure out how you're going to sell yourself. You don't want to really be stressing over the building of the resume and, right. and those things.
Well, and when you think about it, especially in today's atmosphere, the hiring managers or people that are looking, they're only going to spend maybe 20 seconds
yeah.
deciding if they even want to look at it further.
Right.
And actually, Amy and I were talking about this earlier. I think a very important thing is also FaceTime because they have a lot of sheets of paper that they're mm-hmm. looking at or a lot of emails if that's how they receive the resumes. I think even the extent of hand-carrying something into the personnel office, shaking someone's hand and handing it to them while introducing yourself, anything to get that face time and so that you stand out a little bit, so you're a little bit more memorable. So they say, oh, yeah, she seemed very friendly, would be pleasant to work with. Whatever, you know, attributes you bring in person that aren't going to show up on paper, I think you're always going to help yourself if you manage to get even a couple of minutes, a smile, a handshake, please take a look at this, thank you. I think that's going to go a long way.
I agree, because just going in cold with these internet sites, you know, like for instance, if you're trying to go to USA Jobs to get a job with the government, you know, they don't know what you're like in
no.
person. You know, all they're seeing is the qualifications you've put into the, you know, the databanks, and they sift through it, and then, you know, they look for the best match, but that person might not actually be the best match for the job. I agree with that. I think that FaceTime is important, and also connections. You know, people sometimes, if they're in a career for, especially if you're switching entire careers, if you're in teaching for 14 years and then you're switching into content writing, you know, for media sources, you probably don't have a whole lot of connections in those media sources, but any connections you have are better than just going in cold. You know, if you can network, if you're thinking about career switching into a field and you try to meet some people in those couple of years of transition, that can actually
or
help you.
3 degrees of separation,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
I know someone who knows someone.
Yes.
So, and now what about LinkedIn and Facebook and, you know, places
LinkedIn.
Where you can connect with people online and yeah. reinforce your connections?
Yeah, LinkedIn is great. A lot of people don't realize, you know, how often headhunters and hiring managers are looking on LinkedIn for skills, you know, people with skills that they need. So if you can build a good resume and if you put yourself out there on LinkedIn, which is specifically used for jobs and careers, it's not like a social, it's a social network, but not for, you know, socializing. You know, those two things are very, very helpful.
Amy Bain here, Laura Klopp here. We're talking about changing careers. We're going to continue talking about social media and in different ways and different things you need to be aware of as you think about transitioning and changing careers. More coming up this morning on Town Talk on News Talk 1230 WFVA. It's now 8:30.
I had the radio on. I'm listening to
Talk Done Right. News Talk 1230 WFVA Fredericksburg. A Centennial You're listening to Town Talk with Ted on News Talk 1230 WFVA. Got an opinion about today's show? Voice it now on Facebook. Search News Talk 1230 WFVA and place your comments now. Here's the host of Town Talk, Ted Schubel.
Changing careers are our focus this morning. Amy Bain is here. She's kind of our expert on this and talking about various things that she's gone through as she has embarked on this. And Laura Klopp with us. Laura's going to each month bring people like Amy in and introduce us to various segments of the community that sometimes we don't often see or would like to know more about. In talking about social media, Amy, I guess one of the things, if you're going to use Facebook, watch out how you present yourself on Facebook.
That's the common advice. Yeah, I think that, you know, well, I would say no matter who you are, you should probably be careful about how you're presenting yourself to the public. But yeah, definitely if you have employers, you know, searching your name and searching for you, privacy is a big issue. And we all know that Facebook is not entirely private, even if you have your privacy controls set to friends or whatever, other friends can see it. And you know, anyone can really see the information there. So.
And I have heard, Amy, of situations where employers look at, if you're down to a couple of candidates, you'll look at Facebook pages. And I have heard of people who have said they saw things on a person's Facebook page and decided, I don't think we want to, you know, have to deal with that.
Yeah, I would agree. I think that just me personally, I feel like a person shouldn't be disingenuous. I mean, I think if you want to present yourself a certain way, that's fine. But you should be aware of the repercussions of that, too. You know, for instance, if you're proud of being conservative or liberal and you post things on your Facebook page, you know, that's fine if you want to own that. But know that somebody going in and seeing that, you know, seeing a lot of political talk or, you know, alcohol usage on your page or things like that may sway their opinion when they go to look for hiring. So,
absolutely. It's like the FaceTime thing. It's mm-hmm. another aspect of you that doesn't show up on that small sheet of paper. And I think you always have to be aware I mean, if someone just Googles your name, what are they going to find? You know, is it good stuff? Is it nothing? Is it, you know, is it a bunch of pictures that you wouldn't, you know, where you're drinking or what? I mean, I think you just always have to say what of me is out there that I'm not really in control of at this point? And you have to try to be as responsible as you can with how you present yourself everywhere.
I would say on the flip side of that, too, though, Facebook can be very helpful professionally if you're. And Laura knows this too. If you do have a freelance career, or if you have some kind of career where you're trying to promote yourself personally, I have a professional writers page. Laura has a website. I have a website. You know, I think that those kind of things, if you're presenting your professional products, you know, in a way that people can find them and access them easily, is very helpful. So.
Right, I agree. So what is the website address?
For my address? Oh, let's see. It's aebain, that's aebayne .com.
I'm going to look it up. I'm curious to see what you have on your site, actually.
I have all kinds of things on my site.
But like you say, that's something to think about to set something up. And that also shows any prospective employer that you can do that kind of thing.
Yes. Yeah, and I think that is important. People want tech-savvy, you know, employees. So if you can show them that you at least have enough knowledge to get around on a website platform, or like Laura can build websites because she has trained in that, you know, that's one more thing that they're going to look at positively.
Right.
So.
Before we get off of this, and this is going to go back a little bit when we were talking about resumes, and are there things to be aware of, like fonts or things that you can do to set yourself up? And I guess even just some of the how you describe what you do.
Yeah, that's interesting. I did some research, of course, when I was writing my resume, and There's different wisdom out there about fonts on your resume. Of course, kind of fancy fonts, you know, fonts that are a little different than your Times New Roman or Arial, they will get people's attention, but sometimes that's not necessarily a positive thing.
Right.
So I think the more easy you can make your resume to read, you know, you want some white space on there. Even if you have a lot to say, you want some white space. So that their eyes don't get tired trying to, you know, read through the language. The common advice was to keep your font size, you know, at least a 10 and 12 is preferable because that's easier for the eyes. And, you know, I was always told that Times New Roman was the easiest to read because it has serifs on the letters. And anything with a serif is a little easier for the eye to flow over. So, yeah, those things are definitely things you want to consider as you're building your resume or anything written that somebody has to look at.
Laura, as someone who's an artist but also pays attention to how things look on the page, do you have any advice for putting a resume together? If not, I guess what Amy's saying is don't overdo it.
Right. I mean, I think as an artist, I think Amy's advice, the main points, I completely agree with. White space, it's like if you have a poster. I mean, I think resume design is a lot like poster design in a way. You want it to be eye-catching and readable and not so much information that people immediately tune it out. You're talking about someone who does have 20 seconds, and they're going to look at it, and they're going to decide. They don't want to read these complete sentences that have so much information, and they have to pick out the buzzwords. They want to see the buzzwords. So you have to make it so that the way you present it, it's very clear what your skills are. You have to leave the white space because visually our eyes just become tired. Our brains become tired seeing so much information crowded together. So I would just say always pick out your very best. It's like if you're a photographer, an artist, anything. If you're presenting work, it's better to present five incredibly excellent pieces of work and let people wonder, and they'll assume all the rest of your pieces of work are that excellent, than to present 100 pieces saying, I'll get every piece in here, and have 80 of them be subpar. You want to give your very, very best, and then enough to intrigue them.
And it's interesting thinking about white space on the page, too. As a teacher, you know, I taught a lot of different levels of reading ability throughout the years in my English classroom, and that's you know, that's something that we learn early on in teaching is that, you know, if people are struggling readers, I'm not saying hiring managers will be struggling readers, but they're struggling in the sense that they have a lot of material to read through. You know, so the white space is very helpful. for the eye. So I think that's just really important to think about as you write your resume.
And I mean, yeah. I actually like resumes, and I've seen advice both ways for this, but where maybe your header has a little bit of color, something, I wouldn't make the entire thing like crazy wild, but something that just color pops, and just a little bit of a subtle color in the header. If there's a stack of resumes and they're all black ink on white paper, mm-hmm. one that's just a little more nicely designed, maybe if you have your own logo and you put it up, you create your own letterhead for your resume. There's a lot of things you can do just to, and that shows an attention to detail. If you create a letterhead and a separate little logo for yourself for your resumes, it shows that you put that care and attention into the work that you do, and that's what hiring managers want to see.
And then once they decide to look at you, I think those things like your professional websites and things like that can really help you for the same reasons, because they can go in and really see what you're capable of doing at that point.
Right. But you have to get them to the point where they even look at your website. And that's where
Definitely.
All these. I still think, number one, know someone or walk in and shake someone's hand.
Yep.
As we talk about just the resume part, once then you do talk to a hiring manager, you start talking to people. Do you have a, I guess you have to know, have goals set out and know why you're doing what you're doing, because probably you may run into, if you're career changing at times, do you run into people who may be skeptical of why are you doing this?
Well, I imagine so. My personal philosophy is to try to be yourself as much as possible, and you know, people will see who you are and be able to determine whether or not, you know, they want to work with you. I think a lot of it has to do with whether or not they want to work with you. Mm-hmm. That's probably half of getting a job. And then the other half is the skills you bring to the table. You know, somebody could have all the skills in the world, and if they meet you and are, you know, there's a conflict or a negativity, they're not going to want to work with you. So, you definitely have to have a plan in mind, you know, your goals up front in your mind as you're going into that interview, and be able to sell yourself, you know, be able to tell the person in the media market why your skills as a teacher in the classroom are going to translate, you know, when you want to move into media or into tech or into whatever you're moving into, you know, or in the case of Doug McCusker in town, from DOD to ministerial work, you know, those are huge shifts, you know, and people do make those shifts. So.
Well, and a lot of times now people are making the shifts. I mean, you did it because this is what you wanted to do, and you wanted to transition to this. Unfortunately, a lot of people are having to make changes just because of what's happening with the economy.
Yeah, definitely. And people have to be creative. Because of economic reasons, you know, and that's where some of these pieces of advice could really be helpful, because if you have lost your job, in your 40s or 50s, and then you have to quickly transition into something else, but you want to take a comparable job, you know, it may be something entirely different than what you originally started in. So,
and you're dealing with, and in some cases, if you're just kind of dealing with the shock.
Yes.
And trying to bounce
identity.
Back as quick as you write. Yeah. And everything has been pulled and ripped from you, and you're trying to, you know, pull yourself together.
And in that period of time, you have to meet people, and you have to present this confident best face, which can make it harder. You
know? Yeah.
It's like stressful.
It's stressful, and you want to be yourself, but you also, I remember when I actually made the career shift to teaching 8 years ago, and I had done a career changer program. And then I was interviewing, and I had worked as an assistant for an art teacher who let me design lessons and take over the class to aid me. And I was in an interview, and the principal who was interviewing me said, "So what's the most successful lesson you've taught?" And I said, "Well, I haven't actually had my own classes yet, but of the lessons I've taught," and then I didn't get the job. And later I called. I had a tendency to call if I didn't get a job and say, "Thank you very much for meeting me. I was just wondering if you could give me any tips on how I could interview better, what maybe I could have done differently." And she said, "You interviewed very well. We really liked your personality. The only real thing that stood out to me was when I asked what lessons you'd taught, you started by saying, 'Well, I haven't taught any of my own lessons yet.'" She said, "Just say, of a lesson you did teach, even if it was a sub lesson, even if you don't qualify what you're talking about, just put yourself forward in the way that you did have the experience. And you don't need to sort of negate it and make it seem less than it was just because it's not what someone else's would have been. So always remember, your experiences are valuable even if you don't hold them up on necessarily a particular level with someone else's. Don't compare them. Just talk about them as your own experiences.
Yeah, that's fantastic advice, because I think we have a tendency to be negative about things, and the old adage is to try to turn things around into the positive. So
right, don't be too humble. Be nice and be polite. Certainly don't pretend to a skill you don't have.
Right.
But at the same time, don't take the skills you do have and sort of water them down, which I think some of us just have a tendency to do. And because we feel like we're supposed to not be
humble,
too
be
braggy,
humble,
right?
Yeah.
We're supposed to be humble.
Which brings up, be ready for those kind of questions or do some prep in your mind or think – or have someone
practice
with someone.
Yeah, because, and also you think about people that are pleasant to work with are often kind of humble people. You know, nice people, humble people, and they would tend to do things like that because that's just the way they are. Personally, they don't want to, you know, tout themselves too much. But when you go into an interview, you really are promoting yourself just like you would. And I think, and I try to equate it in my mind to promoting something you've created or a product. You know, what if I was selling something that I really loved, and what would I tell people about it? So we kind of have to think of ourselves that way as we go into an interview. I should be loving myself. You know, I love myself, so I need to go in here and promote myself.
We all need to have a best friend who comes into interviews right. with us as like, this person will talk to my strengths. Just ask them. They'll be very honest, I promise.
That's awesome.
Well, and what also strikes me with the two of you, you both have outgoing personalities. For a person who might be in becoming involved as it all of a sudden becomes a career changer, and they've been somebody who years have worked in a cubicle and find now they've got to go find something, it can be really tough.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, even when you're outgoing, if you're nervous and a lot rides on an interview and you're scared, I mean, we all experience that, and I'm sure it's tremendously more so for someone who's by nature shy or by nature not as outgoing. I mean, I think all of us have to remember the special skills and the special whatever we have that we bring to the table, and just be prepared to, you know, try and show that, because even if you're quiet, even if you're, you know, you have something amazing and wonderful, and just try your hardest to let that person see that, because that's where you shine.
And I can speak to that personally, because I think it's funny that you say that I'm outgoing. I've learned to be that way. I'm actually more of an introverted person and would much prefer hide behind my writing and the visual arts and things like that. But being a teacher for 14 years and being in front of classes of 25 kids at a time, you know, five times a day, four times a day, you know, that has trained me to be able to be in front of people and speak and be personable. So you can train yourself. I will say that for my introvert sisters and brothers out there, you can train yourself to, you know, go out there and promote yourself, even as unnatural as it might feel to you.
And definitely do the practices. Have your friends sit with you and ask you questions. Have your friends find someone you don't know to ask you questions, which might seem more like the sort of situation that you would be in with a job interview. You might be able to answer questions that your best friend's asking you. Mm-hmm. Have yourself sit with someone who you've never met before and ask tough questions. You'll get better at it the more you do it. I mean, as with anything else, it's a practice thing.
And have a friend who will be honest with you about
Absolutely.
Certain things and not just say, oh, you're fantastic.
Yeah, you can't improve if you don't get honest, That's critical true. Feedback. Every artist knows that.
That's true.
Amy Bain here, Laura Klopp here. More coming up on Town Talk on News Talk 1230 WFVA.
CYT Fredericksburg. Welcome back to Town Talk with Ted on News Talk 1230 WFVA. You can weigh in on today's Town Talk topic on Facebook. Just search News Talk 1230 WFVA. Now, your host, Ted Schubel.
Amy Bain here, Laura Klopp here. We're talking about career changers and career going about it and putting together resumes and that kind of thing. Just a lot of real good practical advice.
Well, I mean, one thing we haven't covered yet that I'm really curious about for Amy, do you have a plan? Like, let's say you haven't gotten a full-time writing job in 6 months or however long your savings last, and you've left teaching. Do you plan to go back to teaching? Do you plan to find something? Where do you see this taking you? And how can you adjust as the situation demands it?
Well, as of right now, my plan does not include returning to teaching. I leave a little door open there in case that's a need. It's certainly a career that I enjoyed, and it's not something, you know, that I would regret going back to or anything like that. But my heart is in trying to find that career that will allow me to pursue that writing goal. And I think a person, once they make that decision, needs to stay committed to that. So my plans for the future, I do have a little bit of a buffer, and I would suggest anyone deciding to change careers, if you have control over it, not if you lose your job, but if you have control over it, you need to have that built-in padding. They always suggest that, you know, those 4 to 6 months, even longer nowadays, mm-hmm. Of pay built up. But my plans basically, yeah, they deal with a lot of, applying for jobs. And then when I get to the point where I need to take on more work, my plan is to find either temporary work or even, you know, jobs that I could build 2 or 3 jobs together to make
similar
salary.
Oh, the fact that you mentioned temporary work, we have to tell that to everyone out there. A lot of people don't realize temp agencies are a wonderful way to get a job because they need people filling in. Mm-hmm. You are reliable. Eventually, you get a week-long or a maternity mm-hmm. leave mm-hmm. fill-in, and they get to know you as an employee. Mm-hmm. So that is a fantastic way to get your face out there and mm-hmm. to get people to actually see the kind of work you do.
Yeah, yeah. So as far as my plan, though, that's kind of how I plan to proceed. And I really don't know what the future holds, and I'm kind of excited about that. So I hope other people out there in the same situation feel that same excitement if they're making the same decision.
And you've been planning this for a while, too.
A couple of years, yeah. And really, the writing piece, since I started writing for Front Porch, you know, that was my portfolio. I have about 50 to 60 articles on my website, you know, linked to Front Porch or other places I've written for. And I've taken on some freelance work here just the beginning of the summer, and I'll have other magazines and things that I've written for. So, you know, so that was part of my plan, too, is I need to make a portfolio so people can see what I can do. So, yeah.
Will it be different for you come August, and you're not thinking about having to get lesson plans together?
Very, very different. Yeah, I'm already, as a teacher, even at the beginning of the summer, you start thinking, when I go back in the fall.
What will I change? How can I make it better?
Yeah. And I'm still in that mode. Like, I have to turn that part of my brain off, you know, but it'll come. It'll come.
The website is aebayne.com. And that's how people can see that, or if they pick up Front Porch and see an article, they can put a voice to the writing and know exactly who it is. Amy, great to meet you. Good luck to you, and thank you for coming in and sharing all of this.
Thank you. Thank you very much for having me.
And Laura, thank you, and we'll see you again next month. Thanks for doing this.
Thank you very much, and I'm excited about July.
Laura Klopp, Amy Bayne with us this morning on Town Talk. Thank you for listening. See you tomorrow on News Talk 1230 WFVA.
Thanks for listening to Town Talk on News Talk 1230 WFVA. The views expressed by the host and guests on this program are their own and not necessarily those of this station, its management, or Centennial Broadcasting. The Glenn Beck program is next on News Talk 1230 WFVA.